Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Boredom is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Rick?
I'm good. Mike, so you guys are active in this blogging game nowadays, I hear, huh?
We are indeed. We've been blogging up a storm. It's tricky. You know, I've been traveling a lot lately, and I feel a lot of pressure when I'm on the road to keep blogging.
Do you?
Yeah, it's very stressful.
See, this is the reason I won't get a BlackBerry, because it's these things that once you start them, then you're obliged to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're fun to do once in a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, the more of these commitments you get, the less time you have to kind of sit and think and read and just be.
So, Rick, a few weeks ago, we were at a Pennsylvania primary party together. Mm-hmm. Were you at an Indiana or North Carolina primary party on Tuesday?
I was not. No, in fact, we went out with Brutus and Aaron. And we went to Jackson 20, this kind of new Kempton Hotel in Old Town. Beautiful night.
Okay,
courtyard cocktails. It was good stuff.
So Rick, what do you think? You think Obama's got this thing all tied up?
All tied up?
All wrapped up?
All wrapped up. Well, tied up has a different connotation. It's hard.
I guess he had it almost tied up in Indiana. Is that what you're saying?
It's hard to see him not. It's hard to see him not winning, isn't it?
Yeah. So, what do you think? They're going to go to the center now. You're going to see some pivoting, particularly on education.
Well, I don't know. He's got to lock down all these disaffected working class whites, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I can't imagine that. Apparently, I think it might have been Jeff Garin, or was one of the pollsters, was talking about how one of the surest applause lines we've seen out of the crowds. No, this is a National Review, actually. Somebody watching the Obama crowds. Surest applause line for Obama crowds and Hillary crowds was the anti-NCLB line.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as I argued on the blog today, I think that he could even step it up a little more if he wants to appeal to these independent suburban voters that are the real swing voters by also talking about whether NCLB might be not doing so well by high-achieving kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because, after all, which suburban voter doesn't think that their own child is gifted?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, well, lots to cover today, Rick. By the way, did you cut your nose?
Cut my nose? I might have. I do sometimes.
Shaving?
Am I bleeding much?
No, you just got a big scab right in the
middle.
Oh,
I bleed occasionally.
Like somebody punched you.
Where?
Did one of your staff punch you again?
Right here?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Yeah.
No, I didn't even know. I did. That's how I used to break my nose all the time, and I wouldn't even know it was broken until after it had reset. It was too late to do anything about it.
Okay, I don't want to know about that. All right, well, we're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We are going to hear from Jeff Kooner with an Education Outrage of the Week. And then Christina is going to impart some education news of the weird.
Mm.
That's right. Mixing it up today.
Mm.
All right, Christina, get started with Pardon the Gadfly.
Topic one. Looks like a lot of students in Massachusetts who graduated high school and who therefore passed the MCAS are having a tough time in college. The Boston Globe reported that thousands are taking remedial classes and dropping out. Rick, wasn't passing the MCAS supposed to indicate that students were prepared for a 2 or 4 year college?
Yes.
And?
Apparently, it's less predictably useful than many had hoped. Actually, the really disturbing thing here is that everybody pretty much points to the Massachusetts standards as the coin of the realm, as the gold standard. So if a whole lot of folks are passing the Mass standards, and there's, of course, a lot of folks on the ground, Monty Neal and others Walt Haney, mm-hmm. suggesting that the MCAS standards are problematic and need to be made more reasonable and mm-hmm. need to be overhauled. And even these aren't necessarily indicating the kids are ready for college. I'm really scared about what we're going to find out when we really look at kids who are passing much murkier and less impressive standards.
That's right. But here's the question, Rick. I mean, do we really fundamentally believe that it should, in order to graduate from high school, you should be ready for college? I mean, that seems, the Gates Foundation, everybody talks in that language today. I adopted it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, politically, can you actually say we're only going to graduate you from high school if you're ready to take college level work?
No. And I mean, part of the problem here is that everybody likes, everybody likes to hide behind these good intentions. But the reality is graduating high school doesn't have any intrinsic meaning. And graduating college doesn't mean anything. It means you took whatever courses and got whatever grades you need to get out. And we can make these courses and grades as easy or as hard as we feel like. So you know, I mean, this is the big lie about conversations about alignment and 21st century standards, mm-hmm. is in reality, these things become whatever the educators make them out to be.
Yeah, but the point should be, you know, is it okay to have somebody with a high school diploma who could go and get a job, maybe a decent paying job, but not do well in college?
Well, the point is, sure, it should be. Yeah. And in fact, the notion that, I mean, if we're saying that graduating high school should mean you're ready to go to college, mm-hmm. everybody should finish high school, everybody should go to college, the easiest way in which we're going to make this happen is by making college mean nothing.
Okay.
Next one. Mike, the interim study of Reading First's effectiveness came out last week. Give us your thoughts, please.
I'd be happy to. Well, this is, first of all, really tough for this program. Obviously, it's already on the ropes.
By this program, do you mean the podcast?
No. Are you... So self-centered that that's all you think
well,
about?
Given the ground you've staked out here, including waving your thing outside the Department of Ed.
Yeah, no. So this is it is a problem.
And by your thing, I meant your pamphlet, not, okay. not something more you, problematic.
Rick. I don't wave that other thing anywhere.
We're all appreciative about that.
All right, so Reading First. Yes, Reading First is on the ropes. I mean, look, already it was in trouble because of the pseudo-scandal that had erupted last year. Then Congress slashes funds. Now a study comes out that purports to be the study on Reading First showing basically no effects. The problem is the schools that they studied were not nationally representative. Now, that's for a lot of reasons. The evaluators certainly used the most rigorous methodology they could, but they faced a lot of difficult choices, mostly because the evaluation got started after the program was already off and running. So they didn't have some perfect decisions to make. But my beef is that the Institute for Educational Sciences and even the Department of Education, the policy side of the department, didn't point out to anyone that these weren't nationally representative schools. And therefore, all we can say is that these particular sets of Reading First schools did not outperform this particular set of control schools.
Now, why did the Department of Ed take the stance it did, do you think?
The Department or the Institute for Educational Sciences? I'll say the department. I mean, look, Margaret Spelling's office totally blew this one because, you know, anybody could have read the study and raised some of these concerns. And instead, you know, their press statement said, oh, well, it's a popular program. Well, that's not going to stand up to a huge study finding that it's not effective.
Mm. And in fact, it argues against the very logic that undergirds Reading First, right? I mean, the whole right. point of Reading First was that we don't care if it's popular, we right. care if it works.
Which that's is, right.
But Reed Lyon actually had a devastating critique
yeah.
Of the study and raising concerns about the technical issues.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, this does suggest, though, Mike, doesn't it, the limits of what we call scientific research and how we have to be careful about how we do it and how we use it.
Well, it does, and it's back to the if the scientifically based methods are a hammer, everything else looks like a nail, something like that, right? Yeah. Okay, Christina, next topic.
Last one, please. New York City teachers who are disciplined, removed from their classrooms, and awaiting hearings on their infractions collect full salaries while sitting for 7 hours a day in so-called rubber rooms where they do nothing. Randy rubber Weingarten rooms. Calls them, quote, demoralizing, horrible places, unquote, and blames their rise on increased principal autonomy. Rick, what to make of these rooms?
All right, so here's what I'm confused about. If these people are perfectly competent teachers, they're stuck in demoralizing, horrible places, why don't they quit and go get employment with somebody who values their competence?
Great question. I don't know, maybe something about the rubber. They just, I don't know,
they're glue? I mean, this is what I don't get about this conversation. I mean, the whole point is, oh, these aren't lousy teachers. These are perfectly competent yeah, teachers yeah. who've been accessed inappropriately. Well, in most lines of work, I mean, in a lot of lines of work, people wind up with assignments they don't like. They get treated poorly by bosses. What most people do in those circumstances is they say, heck with this. You know, take this job and shove it. I'm going to go work somewhere else.
Right.
So why is it that teachers are uniquely willing to sit in these rooms that are demoralizing, horrible mm-hmm. places and just accept this treatment rather than go somewhere where their competence is going to be valued?
Right. And the question is, oh, well, these teachers, you know, they got fired through no fault of their own. The school's closed or things happen. But you say, look, then they should be able to go get a job in the system. We're talking about a million student system. There's tons. They hire tons of new teachers every year. And yet they haven't been able to land these jobs. It tells you that, well, this is probably something about these teachers, which is why principals don't want to hire them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Randy Weingarten is out there, you know, saying that the mayor is grandstanding on this issue. I don't know. I think she might be grandstanding as she gets ready to take over the AFT.
Mm-hmm. Nailing down her base.
Alrighty.
The Obama tactic.
That's right. Okay, that's all we have time for this week on Pardon the Gadfly. Here we are jovial Jeff Cooner wearing tennis shoes to the office today.
Oh, live it up.
You know, Jeff was very late today. He claims that his train broke down.
Hold on. Last week, Jeff was slipping out for 2 hours in the afternoon for something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You guys caught me, man.
Been hitting the track. Pimlico, man. I'm going to call him Jeff Pimlico Cooner.
I did think I thought I saw the race card in his pocket mm-hmm. earlier. All right, Jeff, what are you outraged about this week?
Mike, it's a very disturbing story. It's a burgeoning scandal out in Los Angeles. It's gotten very big play in the local media. I think it's going to go national. I want to talk about Richard Winton. He's a journalist for the LA Times. I've done a marvelous job, a two-part series on a sex abuse scandal in the Los Angeles school district that is getting bigger and bigger by the day. What has happened is as follows. They have an assistant principal there by the name of Steve Rooney. Rooney used to be the assistant principal at Fauci Learning Center. When he was at that learning center, he was involved in a sexual relationship with a 15-year-old student. He would take her on his motorcycle, take her around, take her to her apartment. She was living there for a couple years, bought her designer purses, iPods, the whole bit. This was found out by a school administrator when the student had a discussion with that administrator. The administrator, instead of reporting the incident, in fact, told the student to not say this or mention this to anybody. Because Rooney was now under criminal investigation by the police for an alleged illegal relationship with this woman. What does the school administration do? Rather than place him on leave or, in fact, do their own follow-up investigation, they transfer him to Markham Middle School. When he's transferred, he then, we find out, has been molesting 13- and 14-year-old female students. Two of them have just come out with very detailed allegations, and there may be even more coming down the pipeline. Mm. You know, Mike, I'm always known as Mr. Pink Slip on this show because I'm always recommending for people to be fired. Mm-hmm. This is more than just firing. I think the school administrator who was behind this, who was interviewed by this former student, who was told by this former student that she was having an improper relationship, the fact that he covered it up, the fact that he didn't report this, is a serious, serious abrogation of his duties. He should not only be fired. If I were that girl and if I was those other victims, I would get a lawyer and sue this guy's pants off. And frankly, and I think the superintendent should be criticized for this. He's now backing off. David Brewer saying, well, he wants an internal investigation and they're very concerned. It's not just this Rooney character. The LA Times has shown there are other principals and assistant principals who have known about illegal sex with teachers, with 13-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds, and they are not reporting it.
Okay,
Mike, it is a burgeoning scandal. Yep. It is outrageous. And if we don't do something about it, I'm telling you, it's going to rival the sex abuse scandal we saw up in Boston with the Catholic Church.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's obviously the parallel. I don't know if the story probably drew that parallel as well. You know, but and the main problem, you know, look, these incidents happen. They're terrible. But, you know, it's when you start to say, OK, we know of a priest that's committed these acts and then we're going to move them to another parish and not tell the parish about the priest's problem. It's the same thing here. Just pass some people,
Mike,
around.
And this is what the parents are absolutely outraged about, because the 13-year-old, the 14-year-old student at Markham, they didn't have to suffer this. This could have been avoided from the get-go had Rooney just been literally transferred. I mean, not transferred, but I mean put in a non-school site or whatever, put on leave or, you know, fired or suspended.
Put in a rubber room?
Whatever. Do whatever you got to do with these people. But, Mike, my question to the superintendent and the school administrator is this. Who's going to give those students their innocence back? Who's going to give them their childhood back? Who's going to give them their dignity back? This is going to shatter them and scar them for the rest of their lives.
Okay.
They should get a lawyer. I'm serious. And literally, screw the screw the district. I'm serious. Screw them and sue them and take them to the cleaners, because this is an absolute outrage. It's a violation, Mike.
Okay, Jeff Cooner, a little worked up today. So, Rick, here's the question I want to ask you about this segment that we do, Education Outrage of the Week. I mean, these sex abuse scandals, they're disgusting. It's very upsetting, and they're not funny. And so, I mean, should we have Jeff say, look, you can't keep talking about things that are going to just depress us? You actually need to come with something that's...
I mean, part of this is part of the deal, right? It's like these talk show hosts on TV and radio, that actually the way they talk about these things actually does make you laugh at the end. By the time Cooner has gotten wound up and is talking about what his sources on the ground are telling him, and is about his pig slips, it, no matter how horrific the story, he could be announcing the death of 11 million due to a nuclear strike.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I might still giggle.
Yeah. And I guess, all right, well, that okay, good. Well, that's redeeming then. That makes me feel better. Well, thank you, Jeff, for your education outrage. Please try to be on time next week again. And for God's sake, I mean, tennis shoes to the office?
Yeah, we got standards to keep, baby.
I mean, yeah, I mean, granted, Rick is wearing shorts right now and flip-flops. You can't, you know, but you have to achieve Rick Hess's status before you're able to just walk into a conference dressed like he does. Our listeners, many know what we're talking about. Okay, well, it is that time, the time we wait for all week long, education news of the weird time. With our special weird correspondent, Christina Henches. Christina, what's weird this week?
In case there was another Christina here. 8-year-old Julian Watson of Eastover, South Carolina, was riding the bus to school at 6:30 a.m. when he encountered an unusual rider, a pit bull. You see, when the bus stopped to pick up fellow student Sean Christenham, the dog also boarded. The students reacted to the furry friend in typical fashion, shrieking and scrambling to get toward the windows. Perhaps young Julian was a little tired because he didn't move fast enough and the pit bull latched itself to his leg. The bite left four gashes in Julian's leg, and he's now staying home from school to nurse his injury. But why did young Sean bring the pit bull on board? Sean's father doesn't know where the dog came from, saying, quote, "I don't know who he belongs to. He just comes and goes," unquote. But Sean says that following the attack, he took the dog back to his house and locked him up in a cage. Who's telling the truth? Somehow the dog escaped, though, and for now, the mysterious creature remains at large. Rick, what's the strangest thing you've ever encountered on a big yellow bus?
That's a good question.
That was a good one. Christina, well done.
Game. I got to say, somebody needs to be fired.
Well, Jeff's got some pink slips. Jeff wants to fire the bus driver.
And how about
let the pit bull on the bus.
How about the voluntary community watch or something? Let's fire these, you know, working fathers and mothers who are out trying. Why aren't they on their game? Lock them up. Throw away the key. Wow. Somebody should be sued.
I have to say I have a kind of a dog phobia myself, so that story just makes me shiver.
That's what I mean. You feel bad. Little elementary school kid, big old pit bull gets on there, latches on. My goodness.
Yeah. But again, I do think there's a lawsuit possibility. I had a friend in elementary school that got bit by a dog and, you know, they won a lawsuit and sent him to college. So, you know, there might be, I'm just saying, a silver lining here.
You know, I got to say, my worst kind of school bus experiences were when actually they'd rent the school buses out in the summer. So I remember being like a counselor in training and driving out to like Minnehaha Springs, West Virginia. And four or five people would throw up in the back of the bus during the course of the day. And so you were basically everybody sticking their head out the window for the last hour and a half through the mountains, which could be, you know, quite hazardous because there's tree branches and you were worried about eyeballs. It was quite an experience.
All right. Well, thank you for that trip down memory lane.
Psychologically harmful, if not physically.
Christina, well done. Thank you.
Indeed. Brought her A game. I don't know. We're going to let Liam back. He could be like Wally Pipp. You know who Wally Pipp was?
Mm-mm.
He was the guy who had to sit down because he had a headache, and Lou Gehrig took his position. Boom.
There you go. Well, I got to run. That's all the time we have for this week. until next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli. At the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.